Hi, welcome to Dessert Before Breakfast, the podcast where we review TV finales through the eyes of someone that's never watched the show. I'm Mike Dervell, and I have seen most of Seinfeld.
I'm Melanie Germain, and I have seen none of Seinfeld.
I'm special guest star Ryan Clare, and I've seen every episode of Seinfeld multiple times.
Nice. So, Ryan, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
This is your first time as a guest on Dessert Before Breakfast, but is not the first time that you were involved in Dessert Before Breakfast.
That's true. Yeah, apparently you use my music for the theme song.
Apparently,
yeah. I knew nothing about this.
Yeah, I was the lead singer of The Brass Action, which is now long gone.
Oh.
R.I.P. But a solid 10 years from you guys. Was it 11 years?
Yeah, just around 12. We like to call it 12 because... I don't know, even number or something.
Round up. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were lucky enough to have a good finale before COVID.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. That was an excellent final show. When you wrote the song, did you think that it would make a good podcast theme?
I feel like anyone who writes music.
Yeah. Actually, we had this in mind. We were hoping that this would be the theme song for a Dessert Before Breakfast podcast. It's just so happy.
Finally able to realize that dream after 11, 10, I don't know what the timeline is, but years.
Close to 10 years, yeah. We actually recorded it in a studio where Nickelback recorded things. So, you know, that's great.
Oh.
Don't kick me off the podcast.
Oh, wow. Our podcast has Nickelback money.
Well, we didn't get much of that money.
I saw Nickelback in concert more than once.
Oh, wow. No way.
You know why? Because no one else goes to the interior BC.
That's pretty cool.
And you know what? It's cool if you like Nickelback, but I'm not really into them anymore.
Yeah, they're just fun to make fun of.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like you're kind of just covering your ass here, Mike. It's like, you're also allowed to like Nickelback. It's not...
Yeah, Mike's like, I'm allowed to like Nickelback.
But I don't. Not anymore.
You know what? This is actually fairly on topic for this episode, is making fun of people.
Yeah, that's true.
So what do you guys know about Seinfeld?
So I watched Seinfeld growing up a lot with my parents. So I feel like I've seen a lot of it, but I really have no idea how much I remember of it. Like I was pretty young when I watched it.
My family was more of a Frasier household. So I don't think I've seen any of Seinfeld except for like a few clips here and there. Like the No Soup for You. That's about that. Yeah, I know about that.
Ooh. See, so this is something I'm curious about. Can you name the four characters or like the four archetypes of characters in Seinfeld? Like, are you kind of tertiarily aware of these characters?
You can name one, right?
Is it Seinfeld?
Do you know his first name?
Is it his Jerry? It's Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're good.
I know about Elaine.
Nice. Elaine Benes, yeah.
Yes, because she does the dance.
Yeah, the thumbs, yeah. And the kicks.
And then the guy with the hair, and he comes in the door really quickly, and that's hilarious.
Cosmo, Kramer.
And then the other guy.
I kind of figured that even if you hadn't watched Seinfeld, you would at least have like a somewhat of an understanding of the template of the show because it's so iconic.
Right, right. Totally.
Are you familiar with any of Jerry's stand-up or Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
No. For the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, I have seen some of his stand-up. There was one like really good bit where it was like about a racehorse who, after he like goes around all the way, he's like, but guys, we were just here. Like, that's funny. And that's literally all I remember.
Right.
I know about the Bee Movie where there's that weird thing going on with the bees and the lady.
Also a heavily memed Jerry Seinfeld property.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he particularly likes that movie, to be honest. He talks about it on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Seth Rogen, and he didn't have really great things to say about it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best way to experience that movie is having it speed up every time the word bee happens.
That's classic. That's so good.
Cool. Well, we're going to watch the final episode of Seinfeld. If you want to watch along at home, it's available stream on Crave in Canada, and we'll be right back.
Bye.
All right, so we are back from watching Seinfeld. Melanie, let's talk about what happened here.
Yeah.
Okay, I have questions off the bat. Is this show just like meta?
This episode is.
Okay, so the whole show is not about him like trying to get a show called Jerry out.
No,
but it is about him at the stand-up comedian Jerry Seinfeld, but a fictionalized version of himself.
Yeah, and obviously the show is named Jerry instead of Seinfeld.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
And it comes up several times. One thing that's not super obvious is that he met Susan, his wife, who was brought up in the episode, George did, at the when they were filming the pilot. She was one of the executives.
Oh, okay.
So then the show gets brought up in a couple episodes when they try to work it out, and then it kind of pops up again in this very last one.
Interesting. But then it doesn't come to fruition because...
Supposedly.
Jail.
Yeah.
I was... It was a trip, man.
Yeah, it is quite a trip.
Like, they're just at their little hangout place, then there's the meeting, and then from the meeting there's a plane ride, and then from the plane ride there's, like, this really weird incident that gets them thrown into jail? Not to mention the trial. Like, what the hell was that about?
Well, you also forgot about the whole almost plane crashing thing, which is just... like, also a great moment.
I mean, that was just, like, he was being dumb, though. Like, you shouldn't jump on a tiny plane like that. Like,
he's being Kramer.
Yeah.
So the episode is actually broken down into two parts normally. Like, when it was originally aired, I think it was we were discussing this earlier, Mike. It was 48 minutes, what we watched it. And then, but it was aired as 100 or an hour 15. And broken down into two. And I believe that it was cut after the plane. It might have been cut when the plane starts to go down. I don't actually recall where that cut happened.
Probably like right when she's about to reveal.
Yeah,
something like that. And then like cut.
Whatever she was going to say.
Whatever she was going to say. Who knows? Like, it's fine.
Yeah, so there's two distinct parts of the episode. I think that's a good way to break it down. Okay. Because the original part is more the traditional show.
Oh.
Kind of more similar. How they're at Jerry's... they hit Monk's, the cafe. They hit Jerry's apartment. I feel that's a good way to discuss it. And then the other part is them like reeling in all these negative characters throughout the show.
Yeah.
Like the trial. And then it's basically like a recap of like, I don't know, the greatest moments, but technically like the worst moments of them.
Yeah, the worst moments.
You know,
yeah.
It's funny watching those greatest/worst moments. I realized that I don't know if I've seen most of Seinfeld. I didn't realize how many seasons Seinfeld had.
How many does it have?
Nine. It has nine seasons.
Oh, really? Oh, damn. Yeah. That's a lot.
And these are like 22 episode seasons too. So yeah, that's a lot of TV. So I probably have seen maybe like, you know, a handful of episodes at most.
Right.
Because yeah, I didn't recognize most of those characters except for the Soup Nazi.
I recognize Daphne, but I recognized her from Frasier.
Right. Again, we're bringing it up, Frasier up again. Yeah. And interesting part too is that Larry David was only a writer from seasons 1 through 7.
Oh, really?
He left for seasons 8 and 9 and then is back for the last episode. Yeah.
Oh, who's Larry David?
The co-creator and co-writer, and he also did Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, okay, cool.
In the show, he's essentially comes out as George.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So I guess, I don't know, let's just do it in those two parts then.
Sure.
So I really, the beginning where it's like the ketchup thing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know George. Like, he's probably the one that I know the least about. He comes off as the cynic.
So neurotic.
Immediately. Like, yeah. He's like that the entire time.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that every character is a bit extra in this last episode.
Oh, yeah.
So George is being himself, but is definitely acting out a little bit more. But they're all things that he's done.
Right.
The ketchup was pretty good.
Right. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But I like... Even the side characters are also big characters. Like, even when he asked for the ketchup, it's not just a yes or a no. It's like, oh, no, these two have their own thing going on. It's like, hey, do you want to give them the ketchup? And I was like, like, whoa. And like, even the, like, just jumping ahead for a second, the lawyer, as soon as I saw the lawyer, I was like, oh, that's also a very big personality.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm guessing that, like, all these characters must have been huge, like next to everybody.
Yep. Jackie Childs is based off of O.J. Simpson's lawyer, Johnny Cochran.
Okay.
And his big thing is, you see him doing the episode is repeat several adjectives in succession, like lewd, lavacious, salacious, and outrageous. I actually wrote that down.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, that was great. It was just, it made the world really lively. Like, is that just New York? Like, is that what that is? Is that what they're trying to show me right now?
Yeah, somewhat. That is what one of the premises of the show is, just the minutiae of the big city life.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
And that is, yeah, kind of what you see in the first half of the episode.
Yeah, I find it very interesting that they when they go to the small town, they like change the music up and the sort of feel a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if the show ventured outside of New York that much.
Not the state, I don't believe. I don't recall an episode that's outside the state. They go upstate a couple of times. They go to like Susan's father's cabin, which Kramer burns down, and a couple other things. Yes, that's such a good episode. But no, I don't recall them really moving around much. And then, yeah, then they end up in Latham, Massachusetts, which is a made up town. I in rewatching this, I was like, they're going to Paris. Did they go to Paris? I was like, that seems really like, I don't remember that. Like, oh,
no, the answer is no.
All right. They do not make it there. Yeah. And there was a funny point about the music, Mike, because the bass is like a synth bass that they're playing in the theme song. And then when they get to Latham, I think that's the only time that you hear anything different. And it's done on like a stand-up bass or something like that, which was super interesting.
Oh, okay. Mm. That makes sense. Yeah.
Cool,
yeah.
More old fashioned. Yeah. I like that. That's cool.
Small town.
I think the bass was definitely like stylistically my favorite part about Seinfeld, was the whole like, you know, the music motifs in the show, for sure.
They're, again, very big and very bold with the sound too.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a joke. Ba-doo, 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 boo. You know, like it's great. I love it.
Yeah. Very sitcom, right? Like the lady makes fun of George for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is this one of the first shows that kind of like was so big? Is that what you would attribute to its success?
NBC did create must-see TV based around this, I do believe.
Okay.
So it was kind of that start of like those nights on TV. And they kind of mentioned that in the, we'll start off on a Wednesday kind of thing. They do. It is very meta in that way. And then when they're talking to the NBC executives, it does kind of parallel some of the things that Jerry went through.
Right.
From what I can tell. Because they do kind of repeat, obviously, some of the ways that the show came about.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. So after they're done with the ketchup bit or whatever, they're walking down the street, and then Kramer shows up, and all like, again, I don't know who this guy is, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting Ace Ventura vibes. Like, is this Jim Carrey's like inspiration for Ace Ventura? Because this is amazing. Big, and then like with his head coming out of the car. And I love how Elaine just like isn't wearing a seatbelt and gets knocked to the front of the car. That was hilarious.
Right, yeah, Cosmo's old car.
And what was so the good deal with the car? Like, he seems so excited about that car. Did he get it like recently or something? Or?
It shows up in a couple of episodes. He gets the because for the most part, they don't know his name. They call him Kramer, which is actually his last name. They figure out his first name is Cosmo. And he's driving down the street in the car. And people are like, hey, Cosmo! You know, and I don't believe the car is like a huge deal in itself. It's just kind of a Cosmo Kramer car, and that he can kind of, it's big and he can lean out of it. And he's, you know, he's a vivacious person. So I think that's all that really signifies. More than anything.
Okay. Right. Yeah. The car matches the personality, kind of.
Exactly. And the way he stops and, as you said, throws a lane for
it. Yeah. Just so big. It's such a big stop. I was like, ah! I thought she was in danger.
Yeah. I felt that Kramer really acted out the most out of everybody in this episode, too. He was, he's crazy. The biggest thing is when he would open the door, he kind of slides in all the time. He does stuff with his, like, yows and and that kind of thing. But the jumping on the 1 foot while smacking his ear to get the water out was just like probably the biggest motions that
was the best bit. Yeah. And it just kept happening over and over again. I actually really loved how there were a few things that they did over and over again, like the phone call.
Right.
Like, what, you're going to call her from here? That's not a good phone call. It's like,
they're so neurotic.
It's so great, but it's just like, this is 100% a show about nothing. And it's great. It just really works.
I don't know if I agree with that.
No?
Oh, so you're going with Estelle Costanza?
Well, I don't know. I don't get the whole, I don't understand what makes this a show about nothing. Like, I don't get the phrase. You know what I mean? Like, I've never understood it.
Okay, so I actually do have an explanation for that. So one of the unofficial mottos, which if you actually look up about the show in itself, one of the mottos was no hugs, no lessons, which is why you'll see them not hug in this episode on purpose.
Right.
So they don't learn lessons at the end of the episode, and they don't hug it out at the end of the episode like you'd see in like King of Queens, you know, where he's just like, oh, he learned his lesson.
Yeah.
In this one, no lesson is learned. They're just as cynical, just as neurotic at the end. And the next episode, everybody just forgets it. And they start over with basically the same premise. It's pretty bizarre that way.
Okay. I get that. That's clever.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Even when they're at the very end of the episode, when they're in jail, they're still talking as if everything's fine.
Yeah.
The button. They're discussing that button's too high.
They didn't learn anything.
Yeah. Oh, God, they really didn't.
So, okay, where are we now? We're in their apartment, and I didn't know that they were like a duo, like Seinfeld and George were a duo of like, one's a writer and one's the comedian. Is that what it was? Like, what he keeps saying he's not a writer. So I don't know if that's actually true.
Yeah. So George is not that is not his profession. No, normally he works for Steinbrenner at one point. He fakes being importer exporter named Art Vandelay, same as the judge.
Okay.
But yeah,
that's a good sign.
But George has kind of always just been a guy.
Okay, great.
So is this true for Larry David as well, or is this more of a fictionalized?
That's a good question. I don't believe that part is really Larry David, and maybe it was before he got it, because like Kramer is based off of Larry David's neighbor, I believe. It was either Jerry or Larry's neighbor. I can't quite remember.
Oh right, yeah.
But I mean, and I would assume that part of George is kind of his pre-writer life, his pre-success life. You can tell, obviously, that they like the Yankees throughout the show. So I think that, yeah, I know that Jerry wanted to play for the Yankees. I wouldn't be surprised if Larry David did as well. But yeah, I'm not totally sure where that part of George's personality comes from.
Right, right. Okay.
George was interesting. When we got to the meeting, I really didn't like him. He was very unprofessional. I don't understand how that meeting went well. But again, once I kind of got in my head, this is a show about nothing, because they say it eventually.
Yeah.
Like, they want it to be a show about nothing. I'm like, oh, okay, this is the meta part where they're telling me what the show is about. And that's actually very good for me, because I've seen none of the other parts of the show.
Yeah.
So once I got in my head, this is a show about nothing, I'm like, okay, he's just a neurotic guy. He's the cynic. He's whatever. And he can't keep his mouth shut. Like, he always has to say something. That's why he got banned from the soup place. I understand.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's actually, his behavior is actually a reference to the original one, where that's why the show got sidelined, was because he was crazy and he got upset because they said the discussion about the show about nothing. Yeah, and George went off, off the handle, similar to as he did here. Only,
oh, I can see it. I can see it already in my head. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's why he said, "Well, or we could not do the show." And like, no, okay, romance it is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, the term water cooler show, does that come from this?
Oh, that was so good. I think that's just off the cuff for this episode. That was pretty good. That was just George's neuroses.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So Yeah, he can't, like, he couldn't keep his mouth shut. It's like, but it should be a coffee machine show. It's like, okay, come on. Listen.
People are drinking bottled water now. Like, let it go.
But the term itself, like, water cooler show, because that is a thing, right? Like, that's a thing that people, that, or they used to say it about shows, because obviously we don't drink water from water coolers anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we also don't really do water bottles anymore.
We also don't do coffee machines, actually.
We also don't, well, that's true as well.
Hey, you guys sound like George.
We also don't do we don't have the same definition of cell phones that we had back then, which I also found interesting as well.
Yeah, she took out like a block and I was like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, and Jerry had to borrow his. Do you guys, like, who borrows a cell phone? That's
weird.
Yeah,
who borrows a cell phone?
Yeah. Yeah. And they have car phones throughout the show, which was weird too. Like, different episodes, they'll be on car phones. And I thought, always thought that was kind of bizarre.
I never had a car phone life. Did you guys live with car phones?
I never made a car phone call. I always thought they were cool.
I had family friends that had car phones. I made a call on a car phone once.
Ooh.
Ooh, look
fancy. Yeah. Look at you. Is it powered by the engine? Like, what powers it? I don't know. I don't know how car phones work.
Do they have their own numbers?
It's just a cell phone, but it's bigger because cell phones weren't small enough yet.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay.
yeah.
Okay, so I actually wanted to talk about, like, when all four of them were at that restaurant or whatever.
Monks, yeah.
That whole bit, like, again, they're not talking about anything in particular. They're just gabbing around like friends. And I just, I really enjoyed it, but I couldn't tell you what it was about. Yeah. I think there's, Elaine talks about something being hilly at one point, and I thought that was hilarious. But yeah, just the whole vibe of the show is really weird to me. I'm not used to watching something like that.
It is very unusual compared to other sitcoms of the era, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, none of the characters are likable on purpose. Yeah. I do think, I'm kind of curious about how much of an element is them being misunderstood versus them being assholes, like, particularly for all the different witnesses they had.
I feel like they were always being assholes.
Yeah.
From the clips that I saw. But again, I have no context. So
I mean, throughout the show, they're always kind of like jerks. They're all often make fun of people. Like, they only, they showed a lot of characters, or like some people said just like one word, and that was like an entire episode of kind of their horrible behavior, which is right. Pretty good. Elaine's boyfriend Putty shows up a couple of spots, but like, and Putty's like throughout the show, they're always kind of mean to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're always making fun of people. Like, there's the episode about the Mimbo. I always enjoyed having when the episodes with Terry Hatcher in there. Those were pretty good. They're just always pretty much horrible. Like, they have their shining seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a theme of the show, is them being really selfish.
Yeah.
Yeah. The being selfish I can deal with, but when they were making fun of that guy, I was just like,
It did seem off even for them. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, maybe I haven't seen enough Seinfeld, but yeah, it did seem off even for them to just, you know.
Like, they're just making fun of people. That stuff wasn't really for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it was over the top for
sure. I think it was meant to be over the top, though, because they did go to prison for it, like, immediately after. I think that they were making a point there. But yeah, what else? When they get to the plane. Oh, the plane was fantastic. As soon as they go in and everyone's like, oh, this is amazing. Oh, this is great. And then George comes in being the cynic. I was like, he's going to hate it. And then he hated it. And I was like, no, it was good. It's weird because usually I don't like characters like that. Like, I don't like the cynical ones who are. But like, the more he talked, the more I was just like, you know what? I'm vibing with this guy. I've had days like this.
There's also like an aspect of, you really like Jewish comedy legends like Mel Brooks and stuff like that, right? And George Costanza is definitely like channeling that comedy for sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And both writers are Jewish, Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. That's probably what I'm feeling then. I'm feeling a touch of nostalgia then. That's probably what it is.
Yeah.
If I feel it. Honestly, I just watched Robin Hood Men in Tights last night. Nice. And I was like laughing like a little kid again. It's fantastic. I can't even. So from the plane, when, and then Kramer starts jumping around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With that ear thing. Again, that was just dumb.
great physical comedy bit.
Oh, great physical comedy bit. I love how he actually managed to get into the pilot's area as well. Like, his movements were so big, he managed to fall in there. What was that planned? Like, do you know that? Do you have that information for me? I'm like, did he actually trip in there, or was it just supposed to jump around?
Oh, I think that was scripted. It was okay. Very good. It was very convincing.
Very convincing. Like the whole,
get the hell out of here.
The ear, like the fact that he was managed to like jump on one leg and do the ear thing is what a great like physical comedian.
Yeah.
My gosh.
I like how much George hated the plane. Get us the Ted Danson plane. This piece of junk. This private plane that's taking us to Paris. It's a piece of junk.
And then when they start going down, and then again, I'm guessing that the Elaine is like, I've always wanted to tell you, is probably where they cut it in half.
Yeah.
But I didn't see that coming. And I didn't know that this was longer than a regular sitcom episode. So I was like, oh, do they just die? I was convinced that they were just going to die. And that was going to be the end of the show. And I was like, oh, how bold. That's crazy.
Oh, sure.
And then they ended up living, and that's great. And then we had that magnificent trial. I couldn't tell you everything that happens in the trial again. That's kind of...
Yeah, they go through a lot of characters.
Yeah.
It's way too many for me to take notes on.
I've got a few witnesses that I want to call out specifically that I'm curious about. I want to know the story behind the rye being stolen, because that seemed like very specifically like he was committing a crime.
Right. And that is one that I don't remember exactly why he's stealing the marble rye, but he needed to get the marble rye. I believe it was for a party. And he's in the bakery and waiting forever, and she takes it. And then as she's leaving, you know, he comes, sneaks along and steals it. And, you know, and you can see in classic Jerry Seinfeld acting, as he runs away, he's breaking character and he's smiling his ass off as he's running away.
That's great.
But yeah, that's the culmination of the entire episode. It's pretty good.
So it was literally like he did actually steal the rye from her. Like there was no like finagling lie on that.
So that was just theft.
Yeah.
He should have probably just gone to prison for that.
That was just literal theft.
Yep. Yep. Straight up.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Great.
Okay. What about, speaking of actual crimes, what about Elaine actually trying to smother someone with a pillow to death? That seems like a pretty significant crime as well.
Attempted murder. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah. I wonder how many other actual crimes they committed. Should go back and tally that up.
I wonder, there's a guy on YouTube, he's a lawyer, and he goes through like shows and he tells people how many crimes they've committed. I bet you he's done a Seinfeld episode. I'm gonna watch it right after this because I want to know. I need a number.
Ooh, that's good. The library cop also says that it's a crime what Jerry did. What is he had, like 35 years of late fees or whatever on the one book?
Oh my gosh.
Do you remember why she tried to kill this man, Elaine?
I do not off of the top of my head. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm totally failing on the ones that you guys are asking me.
Okay, that's fine.
She doesn't need a reason other than she's nuts.
Which character was that that she tries to kill? It's totally leaving me right now.
I don't know.
I don't know. There was a pillow covering its face. We really couldn't see.
Yes.
Dang it. That's okay.
That's okay.
It's a lot of what about Newman? I know we're jumping back a bit, but what about Newman?
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about him.
The arch nemesis?
The Jurassic Park guy.
Oh right, yeah.
Didn't say the magic word.
Yeah, which I guess Jurassic Park would have been late. Would have been close to the end of the
I think it would have been later, after this for sure.
Yeah, because when people saw him in Jurassic Park, they called him the Seinfeld guy.
Oh. Right, yeah. interesting. Yeah. I think I called him the third rock from the sun guy.
Oh, weird.
Was he also third rock from the sun?
He was in third rock from the sun. He was the cop. He was the girlfriend. The boyfriend.
Right. Yes, of course, of course, yeah. Of course. That's right. I totally forgot that. That's funny. Yeah, but Newman is Jerry's arch nemesis, and he's a postal worker. He's Kramer's friend. Oh. Is how he gets involved, and he lives in the building on a different floor. Kramer lives right across from Jerry, and then so Jerry has a lot of interactions, and Newman is always trying to screw with Jerry's life, break up his good relationships, and always wishes the worst on Jerry.
Wait, why is there animosity? Why is he trying to ruin his life?
He's just left out, I feel. I don't think they ever actually, there's a specific instance because it emanates from before the show starts.
Gotcha.
So it's just, Jerry doesn't like Newman, so he doesn't include him. So Newman's always kind of getting pissed off at him. And every once in a while, Jerry will let him in on something. And it's always, all right, Newman. Yeah, it's a great relationship. Yeah,
I guess. I recognized him actually saying Newman, like the Newman. I feel like that must be a thing.
Yeah, and anytime Newman wins, Jerry goes Newman.
Very, very memeable. Very memeable
very
moment
memeable.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters in there. I'm just going to throw one more at you.
Sure.
There is something to do with, actually, I got to throw two more at you.
Oh.
There's something to do with sponges. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah. So, sponges, actually it's funny. So in that episode, that kind of refers to a lot of episodes. They talk about sex sponges a lot, and I'm not actually familiar with that style of contraceptive. I believe it's a bit outdated for the time that I was sexually active. If it's real, I honestly, I've never really figured that out, but
I have heard of it.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So at one point in the show, sponges are off the market. So Elaine tries to get as many sex sponges as she can. But the funniest part is when she rants about the sex sponges to the Virgin in the, who Marla Penny, who came up and which is the reference to the contest also in that. There's a lot of references built around that. Elaine's talking about how somebody saw her sex sponge and yada, yada, yada. And Marla had just told Jerry that she was a virgin, and it's like this super awkward conversation. And then, yeah, that's where it also gets brought up with the rabbi. It's like, it's a common theme, which is kind of bizarre, but yeah, this contraceptive theme, but that's Elaine's preferred method.
Nice.
Yeah. And it is a bit of a weird phrase, I think.
Yeah.
So I think we should probably, very last but not least, talk about the contest, because the contest is kind of famous in the sense that they were able to figure out a way to talk about masturbation on primetime TV.
Oh yeah.
Without actually talking about masturbation. Like, it was actually like a very specific.
I never really thought of that.
Well, I remember seeing I don't know if it was an interview or what, about how like they broke new ground as a sitcom by just not saying certain phrases to trigger the censors.
Amazing. So, this is fantastic.
Oh, it's so good.
And I saw echoes of that.
Yeah. So did you pick up on what the contest is?
I don't know. No, George cheated. That's all I know. But I don't know what the actual contest is.
Yeah. It's basically they try not to masturbate and see who can do it the longest. And it's the episode itself is hilarious.
Oh, gotcha. So it's what, it's what Daphne said.
Yes. Yeah.
But she didn't say it. She didn't say it.
She
said
she alluded to it. She said,
yeah. No, yeah. But that's what I'm saying, is that she alluded to it in this classic sense that a show that's on 7 PM on NBC can allude to it.
Gotcha. I guess I'm just so desensitized about talking about masturbation that it's just like, this is fine. This is normal.
Well, we have Big Mouth now, right? Like, shows say it all the time. But yeah, back then, I guess it would have been taboo. You got a good point there, Mike. That's interesting.
Good point.
Yeah, even the concept of a primetime show is just kind of lost now with Netflix and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. Right. Yeah. Don't talk Don't talk about masturbation. Don't do it.
We can say that on this podcast? Or should
no,
we
no,
just...
No, no, don't talk about it.
The contest. The low talker I thought was one of the best when she takes this stand and she just talks. Can't hear what she's saying.
Yeah. She was a really funny character, but again, I have no idea what the hell that was or what was going on.
Yeah,
that.
There's a bunch of different talkers throughout the episode. There's like the high talker where there's a man who's married to a woman who, and they on the phone, they sound identical because the pitch of his voice is that high. And then there's a close talker who talks really close to your face. And then there's the low talker. So yeah, it's a theme.
It's a whole bit. I love it. Interesting. Oh, can we talk about the bubble man for a second?
Bubble boy?
Bubble boy?
Yeah.
Was he killed? Like, all I saw was the flash, like, all I remember is the flashback and his bubble has popped and I'm like, oh, he's dead now. But then he was there.
Yeah, he takes a stand.
And he's still in the bubble.
Yeah, he survived and they never found a cure. It's so funny. Yeah, you just see the arm. It's so good.
All right. Well, I think we've kind of exhausted the trial. Brian, why don't you talk a little bit about what Seinfeld means to you and that sort of thing?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I was just like obsessed with Seinfeld as a kid. I liked the stand up. I absolutely loved the show. It was just a good show that I watched with my parents and my brother, and we quoted it far too often as kids. It's kind of odd because it never really resonated with me personally because they're much older. They live in New York and I did not grow up in a big city, but just the style of comedy is just fantastic. And, the whole premise of it just being about everyday life and just seeing like the funny little things in interpersonal relationships. Like you can relate almost any scenario to a Seinfeld episode if you try hard enough. We liked it so much that we put the clip to the intro of one of our songs, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like the thought. I really enjoyed the thought that Jerry put into the show. There's like little things like Superman is in like every episode. He either references it, talks about it, uses a quote about Superman, in this last episode, there is a Superman action figure on his shelf, which is the most common place for it to be, close to where his phone was. I felt that it was one of the first shows to really do a lot of things that were carryover jokes that were really obvious and made the episodes funnier that way, because if you were a big fan of the show, then the later seasons when they'd reference those jokes were awesome, kind of like the way that you really saw it in Arrested Development. I felt that kind of led into that style of comedy. I mean,
yeah, you know, it's funny because I was kind of shocked that how much continuity seemed to be in this last episode for a sitcom. Like so many like things, callbacks to various things and sort of things to sort of pull out of this episode. There's a lot there.
Yeah. And you have to be like, you'd have to be so well read into the show to catch some of them. Like one of the weirder ones is the whole thing about Steinbrenner, the owner of the Yankees, that guy that you don't see his face. There's background reasons to why you don't see his face. And then the, Frank Costanza yells out about the, Hideki Arabu, which I didn't know. So actually I took a moment to look it up, and it's a reference to an earlier episode, where he has another tirade about another trade of Jay Bruner that he does. So I guess that's what Frank does when he's in front of, Steinbrenner. And Steinbrenner actually was offered to be in the show. Didn't want to be the character, his own character. He didn't want to play Steinbrenner in the show because he felt that George Costanza was too close of character. He felt that it was like based off of his personality, which is hilarious. And then he was actually did go into another episode, but it was cut because the episode was too long. And so Steinbrenner was filmed, but not included, which was kind of bizarre.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that whole Steinbrenner shtick of not seeing his face is kind of around him not wanting to be in the show. So they didn't actually put his face in the actor's face in the show.
That's funny.
Yeah. And another weird thing is that throughout seasons 8 and 9 are the only seasons that they don't start with the stand-up comedy until the last episode. You notice that they start and end the episode again with a little bit of Jerry's stand-up. And I mean, you wouldn't have known that if you hadn't seen.
Yeah.
all the seasons, you don't really pick up on it. And you're like, hey, season 8, where's the stand-up intros?
Yeah. Oh, one other thing I want to point out is that this is also the third show that we've covered that ends with the courtroom drama.
Oh, really?
After X-Files and Phoenix Wright, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Phoenix Wright count, though. I mean, it's all courtroom drama.
I mean, could you count? I mean, I would count it. It's literally, yeah. But it is kind of odd for sure. Do we want to give our reviews?
Oh, definitely, because this is like such a controversial episode. Some people loved it, some people hated it when it aired. It's hilarious.
I thought it was fantastic personally. I thought it was extremely clever to have them be in jail and then to just end the series on that. I think that was brilliant. I think I'll give it 8 empty ketchup bottles out of 10.
I would give this like 7 dangerous fruits, which are pineapples.
Well, I absolutely love the show and I love the episode, so I'm going to give it 10 big salads out of 10. Ooh. Big salads.
Very nice. Well, sorry, can we touch on something for a second?
Absolutely.
You said that this is a controversial episode. I wasn't aware of that. Can you elaborate a little bit? Like, what do people not like about it?
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either, actually.
Is it just because it's so not like Seinfeld? Is that what it is?
Yeah. It wrapped it up in an odd way, I suppose. Some people didn't like how they dragged through all the characters. Some people didn't like that it was just so drastically different than the other episodes. Like, the first half was, but then the second half wasn't in it. And it kind of left, I suppose it was an odd ending is what the general consensus is, like leaving them in jail after, you know, it's not like, and they're only in there for a year, really. So all it is just kind of another moment in time. I think people felt that it was just not really a real conclusion and it was just kind of like a goofy, weird ending. But,
right.
And the different actors have talked about it over the years. Like Elaine has called it like a total flop.
Really?
And I think they've all talked about their regrets, but I mean, this is years later, like 12 years later, they're talking about it, which I doubt they really want to talk about it at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
I think a lot of what irked people was that it changed. It was just like, we're going through 7 seasons. Larry David was on. He left. The show was kind of continuing on. And then Larry David comes back and the show became kind of more what it was before and just really neurotic. And I think I just kind of pushed people's buttons.
Gotcha. But I mean,
as a fan of the show, I thought it was just everything.
Right. Yeah. It seems to be a common theme with shows of this era. It's similar with, you know, X-Files and
Twin Peaks.
That sort of thing of like, yeah, like it wasn't really the same. It kind of Twin Peaks. Yeah. Kind of run its course. And then, they kind of brought back things to do a proper finale, but it felt kind of weird to try and backtrack a bit to try and make a good finale. I don't know. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Sure. And I think the big thing too, is that people have in mind before they're watching the episode, this is the way that this should end, or, they're going to tie up these storylines or something like that. But they didn't, like, nothing was answered other than that the pilot didn't go through, you know, like they didn't get their show. So, I mean, maybe that pissed people off, but the ending just didn't really tell you anything. It's just a really weird last episode.
Yeah. Well, I kind of appreciated it again, cause I'm not a fan, but I thought it was funny because again, the show's about nothing. So might as well have it end. Kind of on nothing, I guess. I don't know. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. I've always loved this finale for sure.
I think the final conversation is good. The button, right? Yeah. Like it, no matter what happens in the rest of the episode, it starts with like the conversation about the cell phone, the etiquette, cell phone etiquette. Mm-hmm. And then it ends with a conversation about how George's button is too high. And that to me is the true ending of the whole series is just like there, like, and kind of what I mentioned before, the no hugs, no lessons.
Yeah.
It just proves They did not learn a damn thing. It's perfect.
I love the cell phone bit. I love the cell phone bit, or the not calling from jail bit. Like, I thought that was the way they brought that up and sort of called back to it was pretty great.
Yeah. It's a good theme.
Yeah. You know what's really crazy? What's really crazy is that nowadays people don't call people. So is it texting etiquette now?
Oh yeah.
But how would they know where you're texting?
Yeah, I guess it is.
It doesn't really matter anymore, I guess. I guess there's no texting.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, it was apparently rude to call someone from your cell phone while you're out too. So
yeah, that was news to me.
It's also funny that they are talking about their cell phone etiquette, but neither George nor Jerry seem to own a cell phone. Elaine's the only one, and they're like,
yeah, they're
etiquette
running their mouths. They're just running their mouths.
So the final question is, would we go back and watch the series? I said before I'd seen most of Seinfeld. I don't think that's true. I would probably watch the occasional episode for sure, but I probably wouldn't go back and watch episode by episode.
I feel that. I don't think that I would binge this show. Because again, there are some moments where I'm just like, oh, like they're just too terrible right now. Like I need to step away kind of idea. Like I felt the same about when I was like, when I watched The Office, like, oh, they're kind of too terrible. I need to take a minute here. Like I wouldn't binge it, but I do watch it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So would I go back and watch it? I don't know. I don't know about that. I would definitely watch it if it's on TV.
Yeah, and it is on, like, if you're stuck in a hotel and all you got is cable, there is definitely the odd Seinfeld episode will pop up. I never actually felt that it was quite as cringy as Michael Scott was from The Office. There's those moments where you're just like, no, Michael, no.
Yeah, definitely.
The laugh track helps with that for sure.
Right? Yeah. But I personally will definitely be binge watching all of Seinfeld after this.
Amazing.
Not going to sleep till it's done.
Do you have DVDs? Like, where do you watch it? I missed that.
Yeah, you can stream it on Crave, I think.
Ooh, I don't have Crave.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for coming, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Check out The Brass Action on Spotify.
Hey.
And an email. I'm in charge of emails. I need more emails so that I can, like...
Yeah, we need more emails. Just tell us which Seinfeld character you are and why.
No, because they're all terrible people.
Well, maybe there's a good character that a victimized. Which Seinfeld victim are you?
But all of them were kind of jerks too.
Or how about tell us which Seinfeld character you dance the most like? Is it Elaine or is it Kramer?
That's good.
I don't think Jerry dances.
That's good. Yeah.
There it is. See,
yeah,
it, guys. Yeah. Well done. We didn't learn squat.
We didn't learn anything here today.
Mike, quick, do some stand-up. We'll finish it on
this. Do some stand-up.
What's the deal with Zencastr, man? What's the deal with Zencastr? First, they're like, I don't know.
What's the deal with Zencastr, guys? First, they just want you to record your podcast. Then they make you use your camera?
Then you can't turn your camera off?
Actually, you can.
Oh, you can't turn it off.
You can't.
Oh,
really?
Dessert Before Breakfast is hosted by Mike Dorval and Melanie Germain. Editing by me, Callan Dorval. Music by The Brass Action. Send us a voice message by using the link in the description or email us at dessertbeforebreakfast@gmail.com.